And as Joanna mentioned, it is time now for As the Worm Turns with here on Free Range Radio. Are you doing your dishes, Lance?
Yes, I am. Okay. What else do you do when you're sitting on the phone?
I knit. Go to the bathroom. Anyway, so as an introduction to our listeners who may not be aware, Lance Swaggart is an organic gardener on Rogers Mesa up LaRue Creek, has been growing, what is it, like 90% of your own food?
Yeah.
For a very long time. So he is very generous with his knowledge, and so we're just checking in with him today to see what's up in the garden and what we should be doing to plan ahead and so forth. So take it away, Lance.
Take it away. Just one thing that I noticed last week, you know, people talk about where the roots of the trees, you know, reach out to the drip line or something like that. And the drip line is the edge of the branches where the leaves, and that's called the drip line.
And I guess that you're probably thinking about that because of all the rain that we've had. So drip line,
yeah,
so get to see where moisture actually falls.
Yeah.
A rare occurrence in this neighborhood.
And most people say water around the drip line. Well, actually, I was digging a bed, and I was digging up roots that were 27 feet from the drip line. From the mulberries.
Okay.
The particular tree, and they're easy. Mulberry roots are easy to see because they're yellow.
All right.
Yeah. So I just want to know that let people know that the root systems are usually much more extensive than what we really think they are.
Right. But if you're fertilizing your tree or whatever, should you generally be looking at that drip line?
The drip line out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless so they're awful young plants. But once they get big like that, you got to go from the drip line out.
Okay.
Fertilizing and watering.
All right.
And I just was, this is the time of year when I start looking at the different biennial plants, the let's say carrots, beets, Swiss chard, kale, onions, and I'll set aside.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by biannual with that?
First year's all plant growth, next year is seed production.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, annual is, you know, growth and seed production. Biannual is 2 years to do that, and then you have perennials that last a long time.
Right, and then you have things like thistle.
That will last a real, real long time.
Right, but doesn't that, I mean, that appears every 2 years, sort of, doesn't it?
There's a biennial thistle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and there's annual thistle, which most people don't realize is just tumbleweed. Russian thistle is tumbleweed. That's an annual. And then we have the perennial stuff. So, anyways, but I would just get what I was getting at is to, if you have enough, set aside one of those beets, onions, carrots. You need 20 to 30 to get a good genetic diversity within the planting. And you can set those aside so that you can plant them out next year for seed production.
Okay, so I'm feeling blonde. Oh, but that's right, I am. So what do you mean by you need to set aside 20 or 30 for a good seed the genetic diversity?
Well, if you don't have a lot, the lot more you set out, the better. And if you only set out five, what you end up having is inbreeding.
Well, we don't want inbreeding in our gardens, do we?
Well, it's after several generations, they get weak.
Okay.
That's why you need to start with, you know, I've done 10 and 15 as certain things, but it's better if you have more.
Okay, so then they cross-pollinate with each other and that seed production, and that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the beets will cross with the Swiss chard. They're the same family.
Uh-huh. So. And don't you have a aren't you looking for specific qualities of those vegetables that you're setting aside for seed propagation next year?
Oh yeah, you don't buy you don't save crooked ones. You save the ones that are, in your mind, picture perfect.
Okay, so you're looking for your best vegetables, your best beets, your best carrots that you would want to be reproducing to create your seed.
Yeah.
And then when do you plant those? Do you leave them, overwinter them, or do you plant them in the spring?
Well, if you overwinter them in the ground, that's great. The onions won't do that. Onions you have to store just like you normally would and then set them out. I set them out in March, early April.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the others, do you carrots and beets, kohlrabi? Would you do that with kohlrabi too?
Yeah, you can do that.
Parsnips?
Parsnips, yeah.
Okay, so then you would overwinter those, and do you mulch them?
The parsnips, you don't have to.
Okay.
The kohlrabi, you would have to. The best thing with kohlrabi is to put them in root storage of one manner or another.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, parsnips, they're so hardy that they'll be just fine.
All right.
Yeah, and the Swiss chard and the kale, I'll usually mulch. I'll just leave them right where they're at.
Okay.
The problem that I've had with mulching root crops in the ground for the winter is rodents.
All right.
Rodents go in there and chew on them. Yeah, and that's why I personally don't do that. I dig them up and store them in that trench. But we can talk about that later.
Okay.
But I'm going to... Once it dries out a little bit, I'm going to harvest the pearl millet and the amaranth. That heavy rain yesterday started knocking them over. So I and it's not just that the plants are laying over. They've actually come up out of the ground at the base of the roots there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
do you do something? Do you harvest the whole plant? Just cut off the tops? And
I'm going to harvest the whole plant at the base, and I'll let them dry on that plant, just like I do the wheat or rye, or they just let them dry on there. And they'll get a little bit more nutrition from that.
Okay.
And then, all this rain, it does make things like, well, I already harvested 2 buckets of potatoes. I was hoping to leave them in longer, but it's now wet, and the plants are dead. And so the potatoes eventually will rot in wet ground like that.
Right.
So I'm systematically take all those potatoes that I have out there still, get them out in the next few days anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. And, I'm trying to think of anything else. The corn's okay, the dry corn.
Right.
If it kept on raining like this, I would have to... take it out because the rain would go inside the cob and it would start rotting inside that husk.
Okay.
But I don't think that's a problem yet. Yeah. And let's see what else. I have pole beans that are still drying out for seed. I'll leave those because they're up on poles.
It sounds like it's a matter of keeping things off the ground.
Yeah, off the ground is the main thing, yeah.
Okay.
I got to check out. I have some cucumbers for seed. Now I have to go check those because can't help them. Those are laying on the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Will you stick something under them to get them off the ground?
Yeah. I could do that if I need to let them sit out there longer. Otherwise, I'll go ahead and harvest them.
And so, when you're utilizing something like a cucumber for seed or maybe tomatoes, how do you gather the seed from them? And what are you looking for? I mean, do you want the cucumber to mature past the point of when you would normally eat it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You want it yellow, not green.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you want the yellow and the skin's hard. It actually starts getting a harder skin, almost like a delicata squash, not like a regular, the other one of squashes, but more like a delicata or acorn.
Okay.
And, and then you would eventually cut them in open and scrape all the seed out and soak them overnight in a bucket of water, then strain them and dry them out from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that you do the same thing with tomatoes?
Tomatoes you have to let ferment in their own juice.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's I think it's, let's see. I think you put them in the, crush the whole plant, the whole fruit, excuse me, because it's the acids and stuff that are breaking down the seed coat so that they'll be able to germinate.
Okay, so if you were to just pull seeds straight out of the tomato without allowing that fermentation, then the seeds would not germinate?
Well, they wouldn't be as viable.
Okay.
Yes. Some would. But the reality is they need to go through this fermentation process. If you notice, there's all that gelatin-like stuff around them, and that's what you're trying to get off.
Okay.
And you do that through fermenting it, and you have to stir the thing a few times during the day for 3 or 4 days. Anything that's still floating after that is no good.
All right.
As far as seed, anything that sinks is good.
Oh, okay.
So anything at the bottom of the barrel or bucket or whatever is a good seed. And then you just put that out. And I've tried drying things at first. Oh, I'll dry it on paper towels. Dry it on plates or trays, cookie sheets, paper towels, everything sticks together.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so. It's just one of those beginner things. You learn really, really quick.
Okay.
So
and then do you take the fermentation of the tomato and turn it into wine?
No.
Or eat it for the probiotic?
No. It goes into compost and it works really good.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm just doing fall cleanup.
All right.
Yeah.
That sounds good, which we know is very important for our pest control.
Pest control.
Yes, and as we've heard.
Compost for next year.
Right. Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good day out there.
You too. Thanks so much.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. So thanks to Lance for that information. I would encourage you, if you have any kind of questions for Lance, to look at kbnf.org and go to the short features, and there you'll see As the Worm Turns, and all these programs have been recorded.